Hello and welcome to Radio SGN. It is a beautiful day. It's February. It's Black History Month. And I just want to remind everybody before I introduce myself that the QT BIPOC community of Seattle is doing a lot of good work all over the place, all the time. And you should be on the lookout for a bunch of events happening this month. My name is A.V. Eichenbaum. My pronouns are they, them. Lindsay Anderson, she, her, with me as per usual. Lindsay, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Better than great, actually, because I learned something new on Friday, but I'd love to share it with all of our viewers.
Please.
Okay. What is the worst part about getting older, Ash?
Incontinence and losing your faculties.
Wrong. The worst part about getting older is the fact that there are no dogs that are older than you eventually. You get to a point where you realize every dog on earth was born after you, and that's a really depressing thing to learn. It's one of the reasons I cry every year on the day before my birthday. But I just discovered the Guinness World Record has found a new world's oldest dog who's alive today and is the world's oldest dog ever recorded. And this dog is older than you. Isn't that incredible?
How old?
30. This dog is 30 years old. His name is Bobby. He lives in, I want to say, Argentina. And the Guinness World Records, they're very scientific.
Very thorough, yes.
They're thorough, yes. So they have vet records confirming Bobby's age. They did a DNA test that confirms Bobby's age. And Bobby has lived with the same owner who is 38 since he was 8 years old. The kid, not Bobby. The kid who is now almost, you know, a middle-aged person. Mm-hmm. But that's just crazy. I don't know. It makes me really excited. And I hope that Peter can break that record.
What kind of dog is Bobby, do you know?
He's like a herding dog that is native to Argentina. And it's crazy. He was born on a farm. And the farmer guy, who was his owner's dad, didn't want to take care of a litter of puppies. You know, it's a lot, I can say from experience. So he buried them alive to kill all of these newborn puppies. But he missed one, and that was Bobby. So the kids kept Bobby a secret for a couple of months until the parents eventually found out and they were like, well, we can't kill this puppy now.
So he's absorbed the lifespans of his siblings is what you're telling me.
Probably, yes. Because the average lifespan was like 12 years and he is like double surpassed that.
Supernatural. Spooky.
Yeah.
Well, I want to get to a quick pop culture corner before we jump into the rest of the show. But have you read A Psalm for the Wild Built?
I have not.
It's very good. Excellent non-binary representation. It's a cute little solar punk novella about a tea monk in the distant future.
Did you say a teen
monk? A tea monk. Like a tea. Like they do tea service and listen to people talk.
Okay,
it's
cool,
very
cool.
Yeah, it's a very cozy read. I read it in like one sitting. It's only like 150 pages or something. But it's good. It's really good. I read it over the weekend. Picked it up at the Wise Owl Books, who I'd recommend checking out. They're real sweet. They've got a cute little shop dog there. And also over the weekend, I listened to a bunch of old Alan Watts lectures over some lo-fi beats, and I got really ill because I ate some bad chicken and because the concept of time makes me nauseous. Anyway, we've got a great show coming up for you. Audra Boo is our guest. Wonderful, wonderful person. I did mispronounce her name right up top, so she corrects me on that very sweetly. And yeah, we've got a lot to talk about today in terms of city politics. So all that and more after these messages. Support for Radio SGN comes from Book It Repertory Theater, presenting The Murder of Roger Ackroyd. Gossip, blackmail, deception, and betrayal unsettle a peaceful English village. After a pair of mysterious deaths, infamous detective Hercule Poirot is pulled out of retirement to solve the case. Join us at this world premiere of one of Agatha Christie's most innovative and mind-bending mysteries. For tickets, visit bookit.org. That's bookit.org.
Hi, this is Dr. V. Hill with V. Hill Family Medicine, and I would like to tell you a quick story about my primary care practice. I had a patient text me about a cat bite injury to her hand, and she was worried it was now infected. I saw her in clinic that day, cleaned the wound, and arranged for a tetanus shot and antibiotics, saving her critical time, an ER visit, and hundreds of dollars. If you want to know how direct primary care can benefit you, contact me at 253-693-0071 or at viglmd.com.
Intimont Theater and the Williams Project present Lorraine Hansberry's The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window. Don't miss Hansberry's second Broadway play after A Raisin in the Sun in its first professional production in Seattle. playing February 7th through 25th at the Erickson Theater. Learn more at intiman.org. That's intiman.org. Joining me today via Zoom is somebody that I'm so excited to finally talk to. She's a singer, a performer. You've probably seen her all over town, if not performing, then speaking. The Stranger's written about her. We've talked about her on the show. She was the Musician of the Year for our Reader's Choice Awards here at SGN. Adra Boo. Adra, hello. Hi.
Hello. Oh, and let me actually tell you, it's Adra Boo.
Adra. Well, there we go.
Yes. I like a comfortable Adra. Name. Adra Boo.
I appreciate you correcting me because I would have gotten it wrong so many times. And, you know, then Twitter, Adra Boo. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And absolutely, thanks to everyone who voted. I was like, oh, okay. Votes.
And all of our nominees were submitted by readers of the paper, too. So sounds like you got a pretty good following out there. How have you been? What have you been up to?
You know, I have been, is probably everyone's best way to describe the last times of the times that we're still in. You know, it's been wild. Things have definitely changed for me since the Panini. And so, you know, it's a lot of just trying to figure out, like, what's the next thing? How do I feel about it? So I've been taking my time and, you know, I feel impressed, you know, like, yeah. And I'm getting older. So I'm at the point now where I'm like, girl, listen. So it's been wild, but at least I stay curious, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's been nice. And I've been able to be seen in community and do some things. So yeah, it's been a time.
Yeah, absolutely. The pandemic was rough for everybody, but for performers especially. What did you do during that?
Well, you know, you do what you have to do, which is learn how to pivot. And I'm like, Now I feel like, I'm sure we're all tired of talking about the pivot. But that's what I had to do. And so I did perform virtually. And at the time, I was performing with a troupe called Simone Penn. And Simone Penn was like, no, we're going to just start doing these virtual shows. And so that helped me already kind of just get myself into performing online. I feel kind of lucky because my muggle job at the time, already, like, I was teaching these workshops on Zoom, right? Because I was working for a nonprofit that has clients basically in, like, the West. So Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Alaska. And I already knew what Zoom was capable of. But, man, the things I have learned. We were doing, like, full routines with, like, six screens up. And our practices were, like, trying to get the timing right. It was wild. But that I was able to do and performing, just, you know, doing music online. I invested in a lot of tools to make that easier to do. Probably the weirdest thing that most people will say is that you're performing to a screen. That's always wild. But now I could say in the last year, probably, it's been nice to get back in front of people. Even while I've been vaccinated, just being in large groups is still very, I don't know. Still very, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, COVID hasn't left. It doesn't plan to. But I've been able to get people back in the front. So, you know, that's been lovely. What's the word they say? That you can't miss your well till your water's run dry. And I'm like, ooh, I need that water back.
Performing to a screen, how do you even get the energy from the audience the same? Like, it's not the same. Right?
Oh,
you can't
absolutely
feel it.
Not.
It's not palpable. Are you an extrovert or an introvert?
You know, I think I am an extroverted introvert.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a theater kid. So I think I learned how to, like, you know, you learn how to put on a character when you're out.
Yeah.
Part self-protection and part, you know, am I good at this? Right. Part, all the parts of the things. Honestly, I think, like, the hugest benefit that I personally had was having to already teach these workshops on Zoom ahead of everything, right? So when you have to, like, teach a class online to people, you know, Zoom wasn't even new. It's just like, we're trying to reach a bigger group. Sometimes you might have two people on And you have to learn how to make these things, you know, engaging, right? And so I had a good amount of practice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I knew that in that, right? It's like it's me in the room by myself. Mm-hmm. So at least I had that, right? And not everyone did. And so imagine people who didn't know how to utilize that. Those people were way like, what? Right. And so for me, I'm like, okay, I know how many people's in the participant window. I'm going to perform to them. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to look at the camera so they think I'm looking at them. You know, I just had to do all the things I had already just learned. Probably the interesting part is thinking about like, yeah, when you want that, you know, instant gratification of seeing someone's face and know that they liked it. It's like, it's almost a benefit in ways. We're so used to wanting the instant something, right? That instant approval that you're doing something right or that you're doing the right thing. And so I think that one of the benefits of having to perform online is like, if you really love what you do, you're just going to do it. Every moment is a tech rehearsal. And I learned from, you know, being in Fly Moon, you know, we had this thing early on in, right? When we were still just trying to make a name where, okay, if we go to a show and it's like low attendance, we say Action Bronson. There's a story behind that. We Action Bronson each other. And then we know like, okay, we're going to do what we came to do, period. And the context behind that is that there's a clip of Action Bronson. If people aren't familiar, he's a rapper on the East Coast. He's a chunky white dude. You know, very bearded.
He's a chef, right?
Oh, he's a rapper. Hey, the dude got flows. The dude got bars. But he has this video where he performs at a nursing home. Or like, I don't even know if it's a nursing home. It could be like, you know, one of the elder facilities, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like people who are clearly like drinking tea, you know, eating biscuits. They might have just did like a sewing class.
Yeah.
He performed so hard. This guy performed like he was at the club, at the pack club to these old biddies. And clearly had the best time. Like, and I watched this clip so many times. I was so fascinated. And like, you know, you could tell there's people in the room that's like, you know, all the people like, we ain't with this. But it was just the whole video is just sweet. I encourage people to go watch it, right? When you're questioning what you do as a performer and anything around that particular question, like watch this Action Bronson clip, because it's like, you know, hey, you can go in and you could do the thing that you want to do and just rock it out. Like if you enjoy it, you'll enjoy it. That kind of thinking, I think, helped me during the pandemic.
We're going to put that video clip. That's going to be in the show notes, everybody. So you have to watch it now.
You have to watch it.
I'm going
to
watch it right after this. Do you also do coaching? I'm looking at your website right now. I'll be honest with you. It says coaching, encouragement, stage. Because you just, I feel like you just gave me a whole pep talk. And I, what's that like? How'd you get into that?
I think it just was like a natural progression of sorts. I come from a mother and a grandmother that very much was like, love on you, like, you know, love you hard, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, I never didn't have someone pushing me, you know. And I know that you know, most of our parents are just like doing the best they can in whatever time it is. Well, I wasn't pushed into one thing in particular, but if I found an interest, then it was like, okay, we're gonna go ham for you. And so I have that same kind of push for the people around me. And at some point, you know, this muggle job that I had back then, I have again. I've just been like doing it contractually, and now I work with them full time, but I was doing business coaching, right? So you're now taking people through, walking through their business. So the natural progression of things was like, okay, well, I already have all these skills that I've learned in life, and each one teach one. Why would I not want to help someone also get it? Like, get your bag, like, you know, in all the ways. And I'm very passionate about community. And I'm very passionate about, you know, Black and brown people being able to be encouraged. And so, yeah, it was just kind of came from that. I don't do coaching as much as I think other people would like me to. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, also just a little bit of like imposter syndrome, you know, we all have it. It's fine. Yeah. But I know where I've been. I know what I've done. If people ask me a question, they want to know something, I don't mind telling them. You know what I mean? And if someone wants to pay me for it, absolutely. Pay me. I have a Cash App and a Venmo. It's all my name. You know, but I'd rather just not hold the information, right? Like, life is short. If I got hit by a bus, could you imagine if I didn't tell you anything that I did? Like, everyone misses out on that information. There's no reason for me to keep it to myself. So I just, you know, I just want to be the grand encourager of, like, you want to do a thing? Okay, well, hey, here's some stuff to think about. And, like, send the baby off into the world. I think it's the old school, like, it takes a village mentality. You know, like, I was the kid that the village raised. And I want to also, you know, be a part of the village that, you know, brings up other people. And that's in whatever your creative endeavor is and just makes you feel good about what you're doing. Like, we should all have that.
Are you from Seattle?
I was born and raised here.
What is that like? Yeah. I'm a transplant. So the Seattle freeze is something that we talk about on occasion. I go back and forth on it.
I am of the grand opinion that the Seattle freeze is made up from people who also wasn't born and raised here.
That sounds like something a Seattleite would say, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I talk to people often. Yeah. And, you know, we all innately have our moments where we're just not trying to be bothered.
Sure.
Yes, we all are in a hurry to go nowhere. But where I think there's a freeze and I think there's just, you know, we're just doing our own thing. Yes. So oftentimes we're all in a tunnel. Like, I'm not going to feel bad if I'm in a tunnel one day, right? What I do is I know how to recognize that there's someone else in the area, right? I look people in the face. I do all the things. This freeze, though, I feel like it's just built up of, you know, people who just weren't from here, who weren't having a great time, and they bring it. So now you're here. Yeah. You might have been here for 20 years and talking about the freeze. And I'm like, no, if I'm from here my whole life, I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Something's the math ain't mathing. Mm-hmm. The math won't math.
Okay.
So, you know, that is my heart. You know, it might be a hot take to some, but I think, you know, Family Feud style, if you guys 100 people that told you that they were from Seattle, they probably talked to you. They might not talk to you how you wanted to.
Sure.
But we ain't New Yorkers. We ain't going to run you over in a street. I mean, if you walk it too slow, but we go, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. So I'm from California. For a Northern Californian person, I'm a little bit of a downer. I can be a little muted. However, coming up here, I think a lot of it is adjusting to the weather, and I've become a lot more closed off, you know? I've become part of the freeze, How do you break out of that once you're in that?
Well, you just... you gotta, I hate to say it, let it go, I would never do that again.
Okay.
But
well, we've got it recorded for all time. So
I am clearly someone's parent. Yeah, I mean, really, it's just like, you kind of got to force yourself to step out. You know, the weather here is, yes, like, it gives you the sads. I think that's actually the technical acronym.
Yeah.
For seasonal
affective disorder.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so, you know, what I do believe is that, if you come from a place that's often sunny, North Cal, I hear, is actually like, it runs the gamut of weather styles.
Yeah. We get June gloom. Like up here, the difference is it burns off by like noon, you know? And like in the winter, it gets so dark here so quickly.
Yeah.
That's what kills me, you know. And then the gray. I come from a place that gets 300% more sun than Seattle does.
Yes. and that's a thing, right? I think there's a lot of benefits for people who move here, right? For, you know, whether it's your job, you know, obviously tech has brought a ton of people here, but also like it's really gorgeous when it is nice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a lot of beautiful places that I think are very unique to Washington. I just think that, you know, we don't necessarily have all the greatest means to manage, you know, how we feel in these things. Right? We're not getting a lot of vitamin D.
Sure.
And which, you know, it's an actual thing. The lower the vitamin D, like, you know, you're probably going to have more issue, right? So ultimately, I guess the answer to the whole question on how do I, you know, extrovert myself a little bit more is to just try it. It's like food. You know, you're like, oh, I've never had, you know, injera before. Do you like it? I don't know. I never had it. Well, yeah. Maybe today's a day to try it, right? To say that you did it. Maybe that's how more people should address, like, talking to people and acknowledging that people are alive and also going through, like, a major event in the world, right? I think, like, there was the hope that in the pandemic, we would all realize that we're going through the same situation of, you know, losing contact. But what it kind of has done, though, is just like made some people even worse, right? It's made some people just like terrible. It's like, God, go over there. And then you don't want to talk to them. And then the freeze gets further perpetuated. But ultimately, you know, it doesn't take but a moment to look someone in the face and just nod. Like, I saw you, you saw me, okay, cool, right? And that's a baby step. It takes baby steps.
It is nice to meet someone who's proud of being from Seattle. I feel like I don't meet enough people who are, like, excited about Seattle, you know?
You know what, I'm not always proud. Sometimes I'm like, for better or for worse, I'm from Seattle. And there was, like, definitely a phase in my early 20s where I was like, I'm from Seattle, not of Seattle. Because I'm like, you know, my mom was born here, so I'm second generation Seattle. But my grandma's from Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so in our whole house, it was like Southern hospitality. Right? Like, those are the ways that I'm used to moving about the cabin.
Sure.
Right? Like, that's why everybody loved on it so hard. My grandma had tons of foster children. She worked for, like, DSHS for a billion years before she passed. And so, like, you know, my grandma instilled that into everyone. My mom, my uncles, like, we all, that's how we do stuff. That's just who we are. So I think that's kind of what sets me apart. And I mean, I guess also too, it depends on who you ask. Are you from Seattle, right? For Seattle Black community, you know, I'll definitely say for us, most of our origins are from somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So we already, you know, see things a little bit differently, right? We are also aware that we're in a predominantly white space. Seattle, Washington in particular, Seattle specifically. Right. We already know how all this stuff goes. So, you know, tell people to find a Black person that's from Seattle. And that means you got to ask the question, where are you from? Right.
Yeah.
You start to break the freeze when you're like, you know, I'm just going to ask.
Yeah. If I came up to you and was like, where are you from, though?
Well, don't say though. That's
oh,
where
no,
people
no,
are like,
no,
well,
no,
how, you know,
no, not
it's
that.
It's when you put the though on
no,
it.
No, I meant.
But if you did know
no,
me, right?
No, no, I meant
I've actually had that before where someone has just randomly, like, you know, someone might have seen me talking to someone or someone might have, you know, seen me on stage. Actually, matter of fact, people do it all the time when I come off stage.
Yeah.
Where are you from? Where are you from? Like, or, you know, I'll talk to someone in a store. Where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from here.
Yeah. No, I
now,
mean,
the people now don't, you know.
The though is.
The though is delicate. It's delicate.
The though is delicate. The though is me saying. The though is just me. That's California English. It's like.
Yeah. Well, like, we use that up here. We use those.
Yeah. No, but not that way. That's something that's crazy. Okay. That is something I had to adjust to moving up here is the language that's used is different. What I'm used to is when someone says, let's get lunch, it means yes immediately. Like, it's not, like, I'll put it in my calendar, is not a maybe or a no, which is what it is up here, right? And though, it the way I was saying is, like, it puts it in the past tense or in the hypothetical, right?
Yes, well, so in the hypothetical, though, if you came up to me, though,
no.
Aside from other people, and was like, where are you from?
Right.
I would tell you.
For sure.
But, you know, We was just getting technical for, you know, for listeners. So yeah. Listeners never get confused, right? Because if you do go up to someone, and this is just, you know, listeners, if you're listening, you go up to someone, particularly a person of color like myself, mm-hmm. and you say, but where are you from, though? That's what you don't want to enter
exactly,
in with.
Exactly, yeah.
Because then we got to look at you all types of ways. And then I'm about to give you a history lesson that you don't want in a tone that you don't want. But it's, you know, again, we're talking about breaking the freeze, right? We're talking about stepping out, breaking the freeze. And in that way, you want to say, hey, you know, where are you from?
Right.
Right. Or even say, are you from here? Like, I get that all the time. Are you from here? Because people don't think that I am. And I am. I could name you all my little elementary schools and where I went to middle school and high school. That's normally how you could tell other Seattleites.
Sure.
Because then we start comparing notes. We're like, oh. Because, you know, also, we all kind of like assume that we know each other because Seattle doesn't seem that big.
Sure.
But there's still people I don't know. I'd be like, wait, you went to whose high school? What year? That's when we start getting technical.
Mm-hmm. So... Seattle is kind of a small, it has small town vibe pockets. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I live in Eastlake. I've been here for like 5 years, which I kind of snuck my way in.
It's cute over there. You got a water.
Yeah, it's by the water. It's nice. But it's like, you know, last night I went out for a smoke and I ran into a neighbor that I hadn't seen in like months. And it was like they were actually genuinely excited to talk to somebody, you know. And it's pockets of that. I would argue South Lake Union isn't like that anymore. I had a coworker who was born and raised in Magnolia. I don't like Magnolia, and I don't know what I can't put my finger on it. But
there's definitely some, like, you know, hoity-toity, and I don't even use these words. I feel like I'm the old lady in me is starting to really step out in this last year. But there are some neighborhoods that just, like, they're not the coolest for vibes, right? But you know, it's just, I feel like there's a lot of like places that are like good looking, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're like, oh, I'm by the water, for example, right? People in Magnolia, you're by the water. We get it. The water, it's water. Okay. We get it.
Right.
But
it's coming from the sky.
Coming from the sky. It's, you know, it's already there laid out. But I think that, you know, it's also just like internalized, like, you know, oh, I'm from somewhere of like, you know, money, stature, and then mm-hmm. you got a whole other, you know, and Magnolia is like a lot of money people.
Top five neighborhoods in Seattle, go.
Brainerd Beach, West Seattle.
Okay.
Ooh, wait. Okay, and not in any particular order.
Okay.
I'll add that. Brainerd Beach, West Seattle, Rainier Valley, Old Central District, Old Capitol Hill.
Okay, so when you're saying, is that a region or is that like before this last few years? When you're saying
Old Capitol Hill pre-2010.
Okay, good to know.
I will say that I love Seattle. I love it for all the things that I've been able to do. You know, just being here, what I don't always enjoy about Seattle is just like, you know, we always want to tout how progressive we are.
Mm-hmm.
And in all actuality, we're just not. We're not there. And so, you know, that's probably where I'm always just like, you know, I roll my eyes. I do a hard eye roll, you know. And that's why I like old Capitol Hill versus new. You know, like the old venues that were like just like creaky and stinky.
Yeah.
But like, had terrible sound, but had like great vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we were on Capitol Hill last night and I was like, man, I just like to go back in my memories to like when Comet was still the Comet, like, it, you know, when there was like all them little clubs and bars like that used to just be on like Pike going down, Pike and Pine, you know, dirty old Capitol Hill where like the gays were the gay. It was, everything was gay. It wasn't like the gays of Capitol Hill. It was Capitol Hill because it was so damn gay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I miss those times.
I've been told that before. Again, I'm not from here, but I do. I wish I had been. I think, you know, it's definitely a different, even just in the last 5 years, it's been very different. It's changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, we're running up on our time here. Thank you so much. I know
this conversation has been so, I love it because it's like, oh, you know, yeah, people like, we want to know about Audra, but also like, let me tell you about my city. I love talking about it.
Well, that's how you know. That's how you know, right? That's, I love you learn it. A person when they're talking about the things they love. That's how you really learn about a person, right?
Absolutely.
So you've been a delight. Where can we find you online?
You know, the place where I tell everyone to find me is on Instagram. I'm on TikTok, but I'm not really, you know, I'm there to look at your videos, you know, other people's stuff.
Yeah.
But if people want to like find what I'm doing and really like connect with me, people want to ask questions, hit me on the gram. I stay on the gram. Fantastic. Grandma's on the gram.
And your website.
And my website. If you want to book me. Mm-hmm. Go to audraboo.com, AudraBoo.com. Let's talk about it. There's a booking thing and everything. But those two places are where I spend the most time, my website and the gram. So follow me on the gram. Let's get connected. Ask me about Seattle if you're new. I'll tell you my favorite places. And then also, if you want to know about any of my upcoming 2023s, that's where I post everything first. So.
Well, yeah. Audra, thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope we get a chance to have you back. This was fantastic.
This definitely is very, like, part one vibes.
Definitely. Absolutely.
So, yes, when you want to do a part two, let's talk about it. I am always game.
And we're back. Lindsay, over the weekend, you went to the queer film festival, is that right?
Yeah, this film festival is called Colors of Community. It was showcasing short films about gender and sexuality, and it was super cute. It's the first film festival I've ever been to, and it surpassed my expectations. One film in particular that I really enjoyed was an animated film called Pete, about a gender non-conforming child wanting to play baseball in the 70s, based on a true story. And then, to my surprise, at the end of the festival, they invited down the director and writer of Pete, who was Pete themselves and their wife, and they got to talk more about the film. And it's just really cool to meet a filmmaker, an animator, and hear some of the real life story behind what became like really a cute story. It looked like it could have been like a Pixar short.
Oh, that's very sweet. I'm glad you had a good time. Shout out to Northwest Film Festival. They've been doing a lot with the queer community lately, uplifting and amplifying in the way that we like to see. Let's talk local politics. Are you ready to talk about the candidates in the race for Seattle City Council District 3? That's Capitol Hill and the surrounding areas.
I've been ready for days. I've been telling everyone I've met this weekend all about the candidates.
Well, we've got 5 candidates, 4 of them are queer, and that's awesome. Let's talk real quick about Alex Hudson, who's the only non-queer candidate for District 3. She's an urbanist, and she's outspoken about police reform. Specifically, she wants to not rely on cops to be mental health professionals, drug counselors, or housing connectors. She says that Seattle's government has not been serious enough about solving the city's urgent problems, but I haven't found a specific plan about taxes or how she plans to fund those sort of changes in government or where she would like to see the budget go. And hey, that's fine. I mean, she's a candidate. I'm sure there's a plan out there. Maybe. But that also does seem a little boilerplate, like Seattle left, do something about the police, right? And that's also how I feel about this next candidate, Rye Armstrong, who is, again, queer. They're non-binary, gender fluid, but they're an actor, first and foremost. They don't really seem to have any political background, and they want to make Seattle the first large carbon-neutral city, and they think that everyone has a right to shelter, and they hope to reform Seattle police with independent accountability and robust resources for both people of color and the SPD.
They do have a beautiful headshot.
Beautiful headshot. Gorgeous gray eyes. Oh my goodness.
And they were in Pete the Cat off-Broadway. Mm-hmm. If it was on Broadway, they would have my vote, but it's off-Broadway. So, you know, I'm going to have to see some more credentials there. But ideologically, these first two candidates, they both have a lot of things they stand for that I think Seattleites can agree on. Most all Seattleites. But yeah, it's the lack of experience for me. It's the lack of experience in politics that we've seen is sometimes really attractive to voters, like with Trump. That was his big thing, was being an outsider. But I think when you want to get change done and move things and move forward, you know, abolishing the police is a very lofty goal. Making Seattle carbon neutral is a very lofty goal. And I think you just need the fundamental experience and the relationships with other people in politics to be able to effectively get these things done. But I love the ideas. I like where they're coming from.
Yeah, it seems to me like a lot of bark, no bite. That's kind of how it feels. Not a lot of practical input here. And not a lot of practical experience, but we'll see how that goes. Speaking of impracticality, I'd like to just briefly touch on Asuka Jax. I don't know Asuka's pronouns, but they have run for mayor before even. They've run for a number of city offices. Asuka typically runs an unfunded campaign, and the only thing I can find about Asuka is that they are associated with Capitol Hill Pride, which is Charlotte Lefevre's joint. Shouldn't be confused with Pride Fest or Seattle Pride. It's its own thing, and it has a number of issues over the years, including the founder and sort of head person calling out Taking Black Pride, shout out Black History Month, for requesting potential suggested donation, sort of tongue-in-cheek call to reparations fee for white people and non-POC attending Taking Black Pride, which Charlotte, a white woman, potentially straight. I don't know if they're even on in the LGBTQ community, but they've been
I thought Charlotte was bi.
I have no verification of that, and she's never come out to my knowledge. She might be.
She's a very strong ally. I love it when allies are so supportive, they take jobs from LGBTQ people.
She got real worked up about that back in 2021, and again in 2022, she, instead of letting sleeping dogs lie, again took another stab at Taking Black Pride. Her stance was so aggressive that my first Pride season working here at the paper, at the SGN, I had to draft a joint statement denouncing Capitol Hill Pride and its stance against Taking Black Pride, alongside Unite Seattle, who we are no longer associated with, and Malcontent News, who we are no longer associated with because they have their own sort of various issues. But yeah, that was one of my first big things as editor of this paper, was making sure that people knew we did not stand with Charlotte and her nonsense. But yeah, that's Asuka's background. Asuka works with Charlotte Lefevre, and they don't seem to have any practical experience other than running for a bunch of offices constantly.
That, and they can rock a shirt under a dress.
They do rock the shirt-dress combo.
Yes, that is literally all we know about them.
Now, we've got two pretty strong candidates that are historically involved in Seattle politics. We've got Andrew Ashiafu. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm sure I'll get it once I hear him speak, but I haven't. And then Joy Hollingsworth, both very strong candidates. Let's talk about Joy Hollingsworth real quick, because she's a third-generation resident of Seattle's Central District. She's a granddaughter of Dorothy Hollingsworth, who is a civil rights leader. She says she's running because she wants to bring a missing Black and LGBTQ plus perspective to Seattle City Council, which is much needed. What I like about her is she's from Seattle. I'm a transplant. A lot of people are transplants here. But she came up here. She's seen the problems firsthand and seems to have a pretty solid handle on what she wants to do and where she's coming from. And I like that in a politician.
Yeah. She is one of the reasons that I'm really excited that we have ranked choice voting, because these last two candidates are both very strong. And I am going back and forth the more I think about it, who I would put as my number one. I love that she is a, you know, strong and experienced politician, that she is a woman of color, especially because the seat she's filling is Shama Sawants, who is a very influential member of our community. And, you know, it would be great to see another woman there advocating for these issues that are really important. And I also like that she does have connections to civil rights activists in Seattle. I think there's something that has to be said about being a third generation civil rights activist, because you've seen the fight, the effort, the tears that your literally grandmothers have put into these movements, and to see the stalling that we've had, it kind of comes back to a lot of the sentiments that are being felt around Seattle, especially with like the Tyre Nichols murder that happened, that we just haven't seen change no matter how much the people are demanding it. And so I think that there's a bit of radicalness and desperation that is necessary if we want to see things actually change. So I'm very excited about her.
Yeah. What I appreciate about her in a way is she wants to rebuild trust between Seattle police and the communities they operate in, which is an interesting stance. It's not my stance. I'm an abolitionist. But I do appreciate that she wants officers to be a part of the communities that they patrol, because I saw this firsthand. A lot of the officers that were in the BLM protests back in 2020 were from like Renton. And a lot of the officers that patrol the streets now don't live in Seattle proper, so they just see it as a job and not a community. And I think living and working in one's community would strengthen that community, you know, one would hope. Mm-hmm. And this isn't the first time that Seattle politics regarding police has revolved around rebuilding trust with the police. I mean, it's been that way for decades. But it is nice to see that brought back into the conversation. Police reform would be great if we just figured it out and got rid of them, didn't need them. But it's a nice first step. I like to see more community efforts, more community feelings in Seattle as a whole. Yeah. I think that we can together get rid of the supposed myth that is the Seattle freeze if we had more community events and more community feeling. So I want someone from the community representing me. And I genuinely think that Hollingsworth is a really strong advocate and a really strong choice.
I also think that her take on community policing is political, in that it is the most conservative stance that anybody has in this district regarding police. And we know, based on just if you walked around during Sawant's special election recall, that there are a lot of people that are against the idea of abolishing the police, against defunding the police, against socialist politics. Mm-hmm. So I think that makes her a very strong candidate as well with some of the richer people that maybe are a minority in Capitol Hill, but don't make up a minority amount of the votes.
Yeah, that is true. A lot of those sort of NIMBY voters and pro-police voters are wealthier and they are older, and so they do take the time to vote. Whereas the less moderates on the left often are pretty jaded when it comes to voting, I've found. But, you know, hopefully these candidates inspire people to get out there and vote. Let's talk about Andrew Ashiafu, who I really hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. But he is gay. He is already in the LGBTQ plus commission. He's the co-chair. And he's making his first run for Seattle City Council. He'd be the only openly HIV-positive member, and the only member to reveal that he was previously homeless. I would like to see someone who has been unhoused and has experience as someone who has been unhoused couch surfing in the city before, and for a long time was like a missed paycheck away from not having a home. I'm going to be taking a closer look at what he wants, but I think that just his background and experience and potential compassion for the unhoused in Seattle makes him a really strong candidate for me.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of politicians in Seattle, especially our mayor, Mayor Harrell, that run on promises about how they're going to deal with the unhoused problem. And the issue I see is that these people are all coming at the issue without empathy, without a lived experience. And yeah, I agree with you. I think that he would be a very strong candidate as somebody that has that empathy and that experience for people that are often disregarded as subhuman because of their living conditions.
Yeah, and you know, it's pretty hard to pick yourself up by your bootstraps when you don't have an address. It's hard to get hired when you don't have an address.
Yeah. I think that would be one of the most tangible changes that we could see moving forward in Seattle, and one of the most effective as far as helping our city would be more support for people experiencing homelessness. Mm-hmm. I think that It shouldn't be as lofty of a goal as becoming carbon neutral or defunding the police, and yet it is oftentimes seen that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of housing here. The problem is it's owned by landlords. Mm-hmm. You know, and landlords are, you know, parasites.
Yeah, well, and not to mention, you know, the consensus usually, and this is something I hear a lot from my mom, who works in politics in Eastern Washington, where they also have been experiencing a lot of problems with homelessness, is people think that there are adequate facilities for them to go to, you know, adequate housing options that are government paid for, which there aren't. Mm-hmm. The majority of housing for homeless people is privately funded, and it's privately funded by religious organizations, places like the Salvation Army, which are transphobic. They also are very much against people struggling with addiction. They don't see it as a disease or something that needs medical attention. They usually require people to quit cold turkey if they're going to get housing, which can cause a lot of increased risk of overdose if they do start using again. It's just very risky. And these places also are often not pet friendly. So for somebody that is living on the streets where your only family is a dog or a cat that you have with you, which is very common in Seattle, you're not going to risk losing your family for a couple nights of having a roof over your head. It also makes it hard for people that don't have transportation, if they are working a job, to seek shelter somewhere outside of their community that they can't easily walk to. And again, a lot of these people are traveling with all of their belongings in a bag or a tent, and these places aren't accommodating to store their items. So you lose everything that you own just for a night's sleep under a roof. It's just not adequate.
It's not. And what Ashiofu wants is a housing first option, which would be find permanent housing for the unhoused and then deal with the rest, which I'm all for. I would love to do that.
100% agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Strong candidate. He portrays himself as the logical successor to Sawant, and he has a lot more experience than the rest of these candidates just working within the government itself. So yeah, I'd like to speak with him at some point.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really interesting with all these candidates too is a trademark of Sawant is that she was openly socialist, and that is something that I think appealed to a lot of the voters over here in Capitol Hill. None of these candidates have come forward to embrace a pro-socialist ideology. That's not to say that they aren't socialist. That was something that Sawant struggled with after kind of coming out as a socialist. Really becoming an enemy of the rich here in Capitol Hill, which again we talked about is a minority of residents but a majority of voters. But I think it would be interesting to see as this election progresses who maybe is going to explore more socialist ideas like Sawant did.
We're coming up on our time here, but before we go, I do want to shout out to the protesters and activists that were protesting the deaths of Tyree Nichols and Janavi Kandula and Tortuguita. Benny Loy wrote about it. They went to the protest, took a bunch of photos. This is a week ago now, and there were more protests over the weekend. But I do want to shout out to the activists that recognize the SGN as an ally. It's a really big, very heartwarming thing for me and for a lot of our writers. Benny reported to me that they were getting some side eye because, you know, you never know if you can trust the media. But once they announced who they were with, the SGN, people were genuinely more relaxed. And Lindsay, I know you've experienced this with like Black Bloc or other protesters trying to like take your camera. Or I know Nate Gowdy has had a lot of issues with people on all sides of the political spectrum trying to take his camera or silence him as a photojournalist. But the fact that Seattle's activists trust us and trust us as an activist news source, that means a lot to me. I'm really excited to see where that goes and where that leads. And I think that's due largely, Lindsay, to your own reporting and to the sort of ethos that we keep here at the paper. So yeah, just shout out to you guys. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah. I did love hearing that. It warmed my heart to know that not only was Benny and everybody involved safe, but also that the public sees us as an ally, because we are. I mean, we're not just allies, but
we're a free newspaper, we're an activist newspaper, and we're a queer newspaper, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, Well, and it's the history of activist newspapers have always been important, whether it was the abolition of slavery or the civil rights movements of the 60s, 70s, and even like, you know, the queer liberation movement, which arguably is still going on. It is these papers that make a difference. So thank you to our listeners for helping us make a difference. Thank you to our fellow writers. Yeah, it's just heartwarming to know that we're doing something important.
It is. Yeah, it's just a huge shout out to the community before we go. A huge shout out to all of our new followers on Instagram at radio.sgn is this account, and at Seattle Gay News. We've got a lot more followers on TikTok, which is at Seattle Gay News _. We still have all of that following on Facebook and Twitter. You can find us there. And you can find us at any public library in Seattle, King County, or Pierce County. Please pick up a paper. Please tell your friends about us. We're here for you. We're here to inform you. And we're happy to be here. Support Black businesses. You should be doing that year-round, not just Black History Month, because of your weird white guilt or whatever. Members of the QT BIPOC community need that support. It's a cold, cruel world out there. And, yeah. Anyway, there will be some links and suggested places you can go to that have been recommended to me in the show notes. And we're going to be winding up to have a community newsletter in addition to the newspaper. And we're going to be showcasing a lot more stuff there. There's big plans here at the SGN. We're kind of entering phase 3 of my grand master plan here for the paper. So you'll be hearing more about that in the coming year from me here on the show. Lindsay, anything you'd like to say before we head out?
No, just happy Black History Month. And I guess on top of the supporting Black businesses, if you'd like to support a Black queer author, check out this week's book club read is We Deserve Monuments. It's a great fictional work about coming of age as a queer Black woman in America. And I'm just loving reading this book. So check us out on Instagram at SGN_books.
All right, folks. Thank you again so much for listening. Thank you for your continued support. And we'll see you in the funny pages.
Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show is provided by TRG Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org or wherever you find podcasts.